Krishnapad, Paramahamsa Parivraja, Gacharya, Sitaranda, Sri Srimad, Srila Bhakti Sundar, Govindadeva, Goswami Maharaj Ki, Jai. Jai Om Vishnupad, Srila Bhakti Rakak, Siddhartha Goswami Maharaj Ki, Jai. Bhagavan, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki, Jai. Jai Sabhari Karshi, Sri Guru Gauranga Gandharva Govinda Sundar Jiyo Ki, Jai. Sri Giriraj Govardhan Ki, Jai. Sri Rupanuga Guru Varga Ki, Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki, Jai. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Siddhan Siddhigo Bhakti Vrinda Ki, Jai. Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopa Gopinath Shyama Kunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhan Ki, Jai. Vrindavan Dham Ki, Jai. Navadeep Dham Ki, Jai. Sri Chaitanya Saraswat Mat Ki, Jai. Ganga Devi, Jamuna Devi, Bhakti Devi, Tulsi Devi Ki, Jai. Om Vishnu Pad, Vishnu Varenya, Srila Asi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki, Jai. Jai Srila Bhakti Nirmal Acharya Maharaj Ki, Jai. Jai Srila Bhakti Bimal Avadhut Maharaj Ki, Jai. Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sannyas, Lila Smaranam Ki, Jai. Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki, Jai. Nitai Go Primanande. Any questions from anyone? Yes, the gentleman in the back.
Come on,
Akash Bani, a voice from the sky.
His question is very much in the style of the philosopher who was before Hegel. Is Kant?
Kant, Immanuel Kant?
Yeah. So, and he's.
They say if Hegel can, Immanuel Kant.
So, and.
or if Immanuel Kant, Hegel can. In line with what we believe.
Is it possible in our spiritual life to rely on intelligence? Can intelligence help us in the spiritual life? And if it can, to which stage we can use it? And what intelligence can conceive and what it cannot conceive? And he's asking if it's possible to use it at all in our spiritual life, then to which stage, to which degree. And like this. So it's basically what Kant was writing and working on.
That's a good question. We have to have some basis to approach this, to understand properly, because how will we define intelligence? So, interestingly, when it came to Prakriti Sahajyaism, imitationism, Guru Maharaj used, he quoted one verse from the Bhagavad Gita, I was really surprised, to show what is the flaws in their thinking. Because I never thought of it this way, but once he mentioned it and explained what it meant, then I could understand its relevance. So he quoted this verse from the seventh chapter of Bhagavad Gita, says, Bhumir apo anulo vayu kam mano buddhire vacha ahankara ityame vina prakriti rastadha. it seems, you know, Krishna's analyzing, these are, what are the material elements? Earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. He says, Bhumirpa anulabhayo kamanubhirvarivita ahankar itame bina prakritir. This is the divisions of prakriti, and here prakriti in the sense of meaning. What is mundane? Then there's another sloka there. It says, apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param. But there's another type of prakriti that is superior to this. Jiva Shakti, the Jiva soul, is superior to each one of these things. Why is he using this sloka that has this list of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, ego? Because in relation to Sahajism, and you'll see how it's relevant to this question, they're thinking that by reconditioning these elements, whatever they are, that so reconditioned mind, reconditioned intellect will deliver spiritual substance. But what Srila Guru Maharaj is saying, quoting Krishna here, saying all of these things are below the plane of jiva, including intellect. So the jiva plane, the atma, begins above all those things. But in Guru Maharaj's subjective evolution of consciousness, he also gives an interesting parallel. So he will say that introduce this concept of chayabhas, or chidabhas, chayabhas, meaning that the mind, intelligence, ego, these are shadow representations of the self, or the soul, or the spiritual plane. So the mundane mind, the sahajya will think, if we can infuse the mundane mind with images of Krishna, the sound of Krishna's name, that it'll generate spiritual identity, spiritual substance, spiritual identity, the spiritual self. Whereas Guru Maharaj is saying, no, those are all mundane things. No amount of the finite will generate the infinite, not in any particular configuration or in any particular magnitude or quantity of finite will give you the infinite. Whether it's, you know, 50 micrograms of a particular substance from Sandoz Pharmaceuticals or any other thing, it won't deliver this. Because even in its most base position, Atma, or the soul, is above that. That's why, apareyam itastvanyam prakritim vidime param, he tells Arjuna. But beyond these things, there's another substance above them, and that's jiva bhuta. That's the jiva plane. So it begins there. But when Guru Maharaj introduced the concept of chidabhas, saying, a shadow-like representation of consciousness that allows you to operate and navigate in this world. That's what he's saying. That the soul, we hear in kind of an obscure, esoteric Vedic reference, asango hyayam purusha. So the soul is never actually infested, contaminated by the modes of nature. It's, as we told the other day, there's this wonderful sloka in the Bhagavatam, the, what's it called? Nara, Rajo, Dumas, Channa, another one that should be committed to memory. But in that sloka it says, when you see the clouds, when you can't see the moon, but it's hidden by clouds, those clouds that you're, what's visible to you is being illuminated by the very moon that they're covering. So they appear to be the substantial thing, but actually there's a moon in the background that's illuminating them the very thing that you can see. So the very thing you can't see, this is the point being made, what you can't see is illuminating what you can see. Just as that moon, what you can see are the clouds. Can't see the moon? But it's the moon that's illuminating the clouds. So this example means the same. What you can see is the body. You have some hint of mind, intellect, ego, these things. But what cannot be seen, which is the soul, Brahma, is illuminating what you do see. It's the thing that's illuminating the earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and ego. The body you see before you and the mental and intellectual abilities we perceive. So it's the soul and the body, even in the mundane situation. So Guru Maharaj said, then how does that take place? Just one minute it's soul in the soul plane, the next minute navigating the mundane world? No. So he introduced this concept of chayabhas, chittabhas, a shadow-like interim stage. Here's the soul in the chit world, here's the achit jagat, means the unconscious, non-chit world. Here's chayabhas in the middle, a shadow-like stage. And what is that? Where the soul is covered by body, mind, and intellect. So, now, but to get more to the point of this question, but first we have to deal with this, that, so these things in and of themselves, we have to be clear about it, they cannot generate spiritual substance. The mind, the rupa of Krishna, the form of Krishna, is not an image in our minds. Like that we see a poster or an artist's representation. Like I may have told this before, once, some devotees they wanted to have these like Krishna Balaram deities, but then like Subal and Sridhar on the sides. So they're asking Guru Maharaj, how should Subal be seen? Right? I mean Subal mentioned by Rupa Goswami in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, that in this, what do you call, after you know Shraddha, Sarusanga, Bhajana, Kriya, Tatona, Arta, Nibiti, Shatadon, Nishta, Ruchi, Tata, Tata, Bhava, Prema, Bhyun, Dunchati. Then it goes from, what is that? Prem, Bhav. Then there comes Man, Rag, Anurag, Pranay, I forget the sequence, but it goes from Bhav and culminates in Mahabhav. So generally it's mentioned, this bhav is only, and this is not bhava bhakti, but this is after prem, it's only achievable by Braja Gopis or Subal, the highest rung of Cowherd. So when Guru Maharaj answered this question, they go, how should Subal be shown? He said, ready to fulfill the inner desires of Krishna. And that was kind of esoteric, like Nikun Jayuno Rati Kali Sidai interpret. And they're going, no, but we mean like how should he be shown? And Guru Maharaj said, ready to fulfill the inner desires of Krishna. That's who he is, that's how he should be represented. They go, but we're talking about like his gestures, but he said, that an artist will decide. That's an artist's conception. So I'm not going to give you an artist conception. Like when devotees, they see pictures of Krishna, and they ask Prabhupada, is that what Krishna really looks like? And Prabhupada said, no. He said, but when you see him, you'll recognize him. So we get, and then Guru Maharaj took it to an absurd level. He said, so should we think, that image I have in my mind, I heard something. Of some description about Krishna, and I got this mental image, or I saw a picture, or an artist gave a representation. He said, is that Krishna, who's the source of all of this, right? The source of innumerable universes, all the Vaikuntha worlds, of which the innumerable material universes are a drop in the chit jagat. That Krishna, he's that image that we're carrying in our minds. So he means the same. Krishna is not made out of mental substance. Krishna is not made out of intellectual substance. So that part we have to be clear about. So, but now it comes back to, meanwhile, back on earth, where you have a mind and intellect, can you engage them in service? And on this point, I said to Guru Maharaj once, I said, you're always talking about Jnana Sunya Bhakti, you know, knowledge-free devotion, the glories of Jnana Sunya Bhakti. And I mean, this was like a little bit of a light counter, and he's like, yes. And I said, but you know so many things. And he's like, startling. And I said, Saraswati Thakur said, Sridharam Sakalaveti, Sridhar Maharaj knows everything. I said, you know so many Sanskrit verses, you know so many scriptures. I started telling the stories I heard from him. I started telling him the same stories. I said, so you, who are always talking about Jnana Sunya Bhakti, you know so much, you know, so much. So how are we to take that? He had to think for a second. But you know, and you're the same person that said, scholarship is poison, knowledge can be, you know, it's better to be ignorant, you know, like many, many things, as I'm listening carefully to all the things he's saying. I said, but when you Upanishad, the Vedas, so, and you know, whether Sridhar Maharaj reads the newspaper or the Vedas, it's the same. You know, and he said, when Gyan comes to serve, then it's in its rightful possession. So I think that is the answer to the question. That, see, if we're using our intellect to interrogate Krishna, and we think, I'm a very smart guy, you know, and I've studied with, you know, academics and great stuff, and now I'm going to apply that great genius brain I have in it to this Krishna idea. That kind of thing is to be, that's where jnane priyasamudapasanamanta eva, you know, leave your brain at the door. We just have a sign, you know, like where you put your coat and your hat. So I'll say, leave your brain here. Like, can I check your brain for you, sir? Give out a little, like, you know, here you go. But, you know, they, at least in Russia, they still have coat check and hat check. So some civilization. But like that, we just have one like, so you leave your brain at the door. That's what it means. Jnane priyasa udapasanamanta eva. Don't try and think you're going to figure this out by mental power, intellectual analysis. They're going to analyze this. That we're told to resist. And there are just so many slokas talking, you know, what is the famous one? Name Bhakt Chaturvedi. Ye my bhakta swapacha priya tato rajam. When I told Tirtha Maharaj that he said, this Vaikuntha Vritti, I'm still trying after so many years. And I said, yes, Maharaj, because, you know, you're a Brahmin. I said, we're the Vaikuntha Vritti people. Okay? This rule, exemption, is for us to enter. Not people like you so much. But in a teasing way. And he said, he quoted the Name Bhaktas Chatur Vedi. Yes, but Lord says, even if a Brahmin knows the four Vedas, if he's not a devotee, I don't accept him. But if he's a Swapacha Priya, a dog eater, but he's my devotee, then I accept him. And then the next line he says, to what degree? Tato Grajam. Tato Bhakta, Tato Grajam, Sa Pujo Cha Yatahyam. As equal to myself. Whatever you do for me, you can do for my devotee. That level. Not like, well, you know, he's Krishna's devotee, so something. No, not something. Equal. Later, Madhvakta Puja Abhyadika. The worship of my devotee takes precedence over the worship of myself. But anyway, so on that point, so then he started saying, so means gyan, karma. So we hear from Rupa Goswami defining pure devotion. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karma janabritam anupulyena krishnanushilanam bhakti rutama. The pure bhakti rutama, uttama bhakti, is the absence of karma and jnana. Not jnana misra bhakti, or karma misra bhakti, jnana misra bhakti, but jnana shunya bhakti. Which again, Dharma says is like an oxymoron. Knowledge-free devotion. Or as I told the other day, once that Krishna, he likes to surround himself with ignorant people. But then you think, like, what does that mean? Or sometimes he said, the Braja Gopis are the half-civilized, stupid jungle girls. Is that what they are, really? He's saying, that's their posing. That's how they present themselves. But if you start hearing them speak, and how they, when Radharani is playing some game with Krishna, and Madhu Mangal is at his side, his Brahmin advisor, and they realize they're going to get beat very badly in this game, Radharani, seeing that they're in trouble, and Krishna's like, what are we doing? You know, and Radharani said, it takes brains to play this game. What should be our next move? Looking at the board, you have to move them. So there's that level, but here he responded by saying, when Gyan comes to be engaged in the service of devotion in its rightful position. So we can say that in a similar way. Our intelligence, when it's under the influence of the devotional tendency, then it can be employed in service. You know, Srila Prabhupada, he would say, this is something interesting too, that he said, wherever there are two intelligent devotees, they can see two different ways to do the same thing. Because Emerson says, genius is sufficiently the enemy of genius. Like, it's not good to have two geniuses in the same place, location, at the same time. So, and Prabhupada's way of expressing that, we say, so you have two intelligent devotees. They say, all right, what should we do? One said, well, I think we should do this. The other said, well, I think we should do that. Both of those things are tenable, they're possible. And according to Guru Maharaj, if it's done in the mood of service, we're not that we're trying to bring the infinite under our control, but we're offering this in service, then of course it should be there. Sometimes we equate intelligence with a discriminating factor. So that means understanding that one thing is superior to another, one is more desirable to another, one is more favorable than another. Many different types of scenarios. But how shall that intelligence be calibrated? This is critical. The calibration of the intelligence. What are the metrics for calibrating your intelligence? Sometimes Guru Maharaj will say, false ego is like an instrument that's giving bad reading. Like, I remember Gurudev had this wrist instrument, like, what are they, a blood pressure machine. It gives blood pressure and your heart rate, and you just put it on your wrist and it goes, you know, instead of doing the thing here. But sometimes, not knowing that because it had been sitting for a long time or whatever, the batteries were weak or whatever, Gurudev would put this on, he'd get a reading, and you'd see his face, and his whole attitude, like, he'd get a horrible reading from this thing, and then it would, you know, put him in anxiety. So sometimes, myself or other, we have to go over, I'd like, try it on me. I know, at least, until recently, I'm like 120 over 70, like a pretty normal, so I'd see, if I don't get something close to that, then it probably needs to be recalibrated, and then we can tell Mars not to worry. So Guru Mars says the false ego is like that machine that's giving you bad, that's giving you a reading of the environment and your place in it and so many things, but it's giving a false reading. And if the intelligence is under the influence of false ego, then even a brilliant man will be deceived. There's one famous sloka from the fifth canto. Yasyasti bhaktir bhagavata kinchana sarvai gunais tatra samasate sura harava bhaktasya kuto mahaguna manoratenasato dabato bahi. The bhagavata kinchans, those are the real devotees who have no other interest than Krishna, Guru Vaishnava, Krishna service. Why? They know there's nothing in this world they find that that could hold their interest and their attention. Those types, the Bhagavat, Yashasti, Bhaktir, Bhagavata Kinshana, Sarvai Gunais Tatra Samasate Sura. We see that gradually all good qualities are manifest in them. They're, and they're, as a consequence, illuminating personalities. And as we alluded to before, they may come from the lowest position socially, economically, educationally, so many things are not a factor in their spiritual development. Then it says, Harava Bhaktasya Kuto Mahaguna Manoratenasato Davato Bhahi. On the other hand, someone who is a non-devotee, you know, they may be super intelligent, but really there's no substance there to them because it's not spiritually grounded. It's not, they're not under the influence of a proper spiritual conception. Sometimes we see, even in the, to give a crude example, like the police or detectives, and they find some very devious, like serial killer or someone like that. They say, they'll point out, this man is obviously extremely intelligent when they see what his modus operandi is. But then they realize, yeah, he's intelligent, it may be genius level intelligence, but, you know, devious and evil hearted. So, what kind of intelligence is necessary? Means that gradually has to become Dharma Buddhi. And this reminds me of another thing, that once in Bombay, the land that Srila Prabhupada Swamiraj got for the Bombay Center there, a place called Juhu Beach, where many Bollywood movie stars live. Right? That was the neighborhood where he got land and then built this giant temple. And in his day, sometimes Bollywood stars would come. They're also life members, as you can imagine, and some of them, as we know, are extraordinarily beautiful. And once one such star, this beautiful woman, and you know, just by entering the room, the whole atmosphere in the room changed noticeably. Right? And Prabhupada, this wasn't lost on him, and he said, especially among the men were like, temperature rising,
fever is high, kind of thing. So after she left, you know, the air was like a little thicker, and Prabhupada said, he said, Mayavadis, if they, a beautiful woman like that enters the room, their way of dealing with this is to say, she's an illusion. There's nothing really there. Right? That's their approach. It's just an illusion. There's nothing there. No, that kind of thing. He said, but not the Vaishnava. He said, they will say that, they will recognize that is a beautiful woman because they're very intelligent. He said, they will recognize that is a beautiful woman. He said, but they won't do anything about it. And you can interpret that in your own way. And then he told this story about Yudhisthira Maharaj. Because we can understand from Mahabharata and other places that Kunti Devi, the mother of the Pandavas, not Draupadi, their wife, Kunti Devi, their mother, she was extraordinarily beautiful. Right? She would chant her mantra and like the devas were descending into this world. She is, when they say world-class beauty, she was beyond, you know, like interplanetary beauty, that type of world-class beauty. And she was a young girl, so if you do the math, she was not so old, you know, when they were, her sons were like in their 20s or something, she wasn't that old. And she was still beautiful. So, remember, Yudhisthira is honest to a fault, as the saying goes. Because honesty should not be a fault, but honest to a fault. As was Srila Guru Maharaj. Srila Guru Maharaj could not lie. And he once said, when I made this vow, from this day forward, I will always and only speak the truth. He said, I got Himalayan courage. And the world became like a ball in my hand. He said that. And once Gurudev needed him to lie. And he knows Guru Maharaj cannot lie. So he's like begging him to make an exception this one time, but he knows Guru Maharaj, he just can't. Then Gurudev said, because some man was going to come there, maybe we can imagine, and doing some assessment or something. So then Gurudev, who's very intelligent, using his intelligence and service, said, what about if I say something and you don't say anything? Like, and Gurudev said, that I can do. Said, so I'm going to say this in front of you and then you don't say anything. That's using your intelligence and service. And really it is, because when the Gaudiya Math, when they were having problems and ended up in court, one side, you know, saffron on this, saffron versus saffron. One man came to Guru Maharaj and said, oh, you know, Swamiji, this is so sad. One sadhu here and a sadhu, and they're fighting in the courts. And, you know. And Guru Maharaj said, if you can go to court for your purpose, but we can't go to court for Krishna, we're also prepared to go to court. Said, our Guru Maharaj didn't make some sadhus who are like in a cave somewhere, you know, outside of Rishikesh, waiting for Russian tourists. So, when they're in the court, at one point, they're interviewing, who later becomes Bhakti Vilas Tirthamaraj, and they say, did you lie in this particular instance? And he says, you know, under oath, yes, I lied. And then Vasudev's, Ananta Vasudev, his attendant said, we got him! Like, you know, like this is a win for us. And Gurudev said, that Vasudev Prabhu said, no. We, over that issue, we will not take him down over that. He said, because he did that for Prabhupada, for Saraswati Thakur, for Gaudi, for service. We worship that. So not over that, even though he could have won on this point, he said, I won't fault him for that. So that's a new way to see things. So anyway, back to the story with Srila Prabhupada. So he said, they asked, Yudhisthira Maharaj was asked, Kunti Devi is this world-class interplanetary level beauty. And she's still beautiful. And she's your mother. Are you ever attracted to her? And Yudhisthira Maharaj cannot lie. And he said, yes, sometimes. He said, but I control it with my dharma buddhi. So to the degree that Krishna consciousness, Krishna conception proper, has entered on even on that level to the external intelligence mind, etc., it'll be more reliable to discriminate and make judgments, assuming that we want something to have some spiritual color to it. And sometimes in the world, we're hiring someone. If we hire someone for their physical prowess, we could also hire someone for other types of abilities too. We expect them to use their intelligence, we'll use ours. But I'm making a distinction here between not trying to think that by the exercise of intellect we can penetrate deeper into Krishna consciousness, no. But we can use our, and should use our full intellect and intelligence in service to Guru, Guranga, Raja, Govinda. That we want to do. Remember when Srila Keshava Maharaj was praising Srila Govinda Maharaj, Srila Gurudev. Many times he praised him, but one particular praise he said was that the Gaudiya Mat, in Gaudiya Mat, Srila Keshava Maharaj had a substantial mat, a lot of resources, men, as did Bhakti Vilas Tirtha Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Dwaita Madhava Maharaj, the others. And at the time, Guru Maharaj, really what he had is Govinda Maharaj, Gurudev. And there were certain things that those with all the resources, men, etc., were trying to do and they couldn't achieve. But Gurudev did. Without all the resources, financially, manpower, etc. And so, these are the words of Srila Keshava Maharaj. He said, what he's lacking in resources, he's doing with his intelligence. So he's using his full intelligence in the service of the lotus feet of Guru Maharaj. But when we talk about dharma buddhi, I mentioned that, this is another point I want to make, that we're constantly hearing the scriptures every day, like we say pat, and kirtan and pat means the songs, the Gaudiya canon of Narottam Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and others, but principally from them, and from Srila Guru Maharaj. So we're hearing this, and the pot means, we say, oh, class, that's the meaning. Another meaning though is recitation. Because really, if someone's not giving explanations, really what we're to do on a daily basis is to have recitations of the scriptures. That's what Parayan is. You read it in, go back to the end, and do it again. So there's always a recitation of Charitamritam, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Bhaktivinoda, this, it's always going on. And what part of what's happening is a cumulative effect where consciously or otherwise some impressions are being made within us. That's why you'll see in a lot, even though people, they're doing many different things, the recitation is going on. This divine vibration is being made in the form of the songs, the scriptures, shastra. So even if someone isn't, in this sense, 100% focused on it, it's like, what do you call it? Is it osmosis? Where you like, by being in a particular environment, it just enters your system. Right? Something like that, too. That's like why the spiritual center is important also. Guru Maharaj would say, give the example of someone who has respiratory problems. Like in America, they'll say, oh, move to Arizona. And what they mean by that is there's no humidity there. It's very hot, and so just by being in that environment, you'll, just by walking around, whatever it is you're doing, you'll get better on some level. Like once I was in St. Petersburg, and having a discussion with Preetu, and he was saying, love something about the atmosphere there, and the environment, and he said, in Soviet times, they were sending people here. And I was saying, oh, you mean like Arizona, you'll get, just by being there, you'll be, cured? He said, no, just by being here, you'll die. They had the opposite idea. They're sending you there hoping that, Is there anyone I haven't offended? These are true stories. I'm not making this up. But in other words, the environment. And we could have taken that example. You think some environment, very good for, will help. Maybe you have some problem. Just be there, it'll help you. Another environment will exacerbate the problem, make it worse. So, we use the word center, whatever. So you have this place where this divine vibration is being made. And even if you're just going up and down the stairs and doing whatever you're doing, it's infused in the atmosphere, and gradually the cumulative effect will be there. It's to our betterment. That's what I mean to say. And on a high level, something I found really inspiring and also charming was once I was listening to Srila Guru Maharaj speak the Chaitanyastakam of Rupa Goswami. So we know the Shikshastakam of Mahaprabhu, how it's the position that it occupies. But then we think, if Rupa Goswami is Mahaprabhu's mouthpiece, this Chaitanyastakam, it is extraordinary. By any metrics, it's just extraordinary. And there's more than one. There may be three. But the first one, and it's quoted by Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami and Chaitanya Charitamritam, just in any way you measure it, it's extraordinary, it's substantial. So, but there were some things that weren't clear to me. Many things. I mean, that's an understatement. But I just meant literally in what I'm like doing. And so I came out of my room at Gurudev's veranda, and he was there, and he said, I'm listening to this one part. I'm not sure what Guru Maharaj means by this particular sloka, or part of, you know, how he's referring, rendering this sloka. And then Gurudev, you know, he like just starts explaining it beautifully, wonderfully. And I was like, I was just stunned, that so, it came out of him so easily. In the midst of so many other things going on, he could just give this. And then I took that opportunity to ask him, I said, oh, Maharaj, when did you memorize this or learn this? He said, oh, I never did. Then I was a little bewildered. I'm saying, well, you're like giving, you're quoting it, giving this extraordinary explanation, and you're saying you never took the time to learn it. And he said, no. And I said, then how? And he said, well, every day when Guru Maharaj is bathing, he's taking off his own, putting them, I'm coming to get his laundry, and I'm cleaning his veranda, and I can, and Guru Maharaj, I hear, he's taking the loda and the water and pouring on his head, you know, Raso Dama Kamar Budama Dura Dhamma Jala Tanur Jatina Mutangsha Starani Karabidyoti Vasana Hiranyana Lakshmi Varan Abhivaman Angikarucha Satchetana Kime Punar Apidashor Yashati Padam. And so I'm hearing this, and he said, and by serving Guru Maharaj, I'm just serving Guru Maharaj, that's what my purpose there. And he's doing this, and it's transferred from Srila Guru Maharaj's heart into my heart. That's how it came to me. So, that's our aspiration. That by serving the Vaishnava, that we have some estimation of our own position. We know that. We don't have to now go into a litany of our disqualifications. But our hope is that we serve the lotus feet of Guru and Vaishnava, and what's in their hearts, if a little bit of that, a little particle of that can be transferred into our heart, then satsanga sevadirmi nam. Sangsaresman kanardopi satsanga sevadirmi nam. Here, sevadi means treasure. The treasure to be got in this world is the association and service of a Vaishnava. Then the treasure is transferred from their heart to our heart. So in doing that service, yeah, kai, mano, baka, body, mind, words, intelligence, the famous sloka in the, it's from the Bhagavatam, but it's quoted in the Adi Lila of Chaitanya Charitamritam. Try and remember. But it says how every person should engage their body, mind, their money, their intelligence, saying on different levels. I can't remember that, but that, so everything. And when those things serve the higher, then they're gradually achieve their rightful position. And when Guru Maharaj talks in his Bhagavad Gita about, there's a section, and all this will be the teaser, for, where he talks about how Buddhi Yoga is higher than Bhakti Yoga. But when Guru Maharaj was like Buddhi, like in his Gayatri explanation, the D, Dhyoyona Prachodaya, D, which is generally rendered as meditation, to meditate. Guru Maharaj, this is so beautiful. He's saying, what is, he said, D here means Buddhi, intelligence. He said, what is meditation? It's not telling you to like engage in abstract meditation, right? Like meditate on the sound of one hand clapping. I was at an academic conference once. Maybe I was in a bit of a whimsical mood or something. Anyway, the person before me was a Zen Buddhist. He spoke. So at the end of his lecture, I went. Because he kept talking about emptiness. Everything was about emptiness. And when emptiness, that concept, you meditate, and then you realize that you are empty, and it's empty, and everything's empty. You know? And we're in the bathroom in front of the urinals with these other scholars. And one guy goes, what did you think about his talk? He said, it left me feeling empty. And they all went, because they knew this was absurd. But why did I say that? Oh, meditation, D. So Guru Maharaj said, D means buddhi, but it doesn't mean abstract. He said it means using your intelligence in service. That's what it means. Dhyoyona prachodaya. And that, and if you can do that, then you'll really be absorbed. Your mind will be controlled, your senses will be subdued, everything. When you're fully engaging your intelligence in the service, in seva, saying, that's what it's telling you. Hare Krishna.